Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today on the program. Rich Guthrie is here, as usual, to help answer your questions about them. A veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, and former compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society, Rich is our resident avian expert. He's got a new series on his blog, 50 Birds Every Birder Should Know. We'll talk about that coming up. Also joining us today is Francis Groters, owner of Catskill Native Plants in Kerhonkson, New York. And along with partner Diane Greenberg, they've been helping gardeners garden for a better environment at the Catskill Native Nursery by offering native plants that help restore the ability of our backyards to function in an ecological manner. Ordinarily, Francis, I would say, well, you're a natural for the gardening show. How does this tie in with birds?
Well, we are a nursery. We sell plants, but we've always... Also, one of our primary goals is to help people restore the ecology of their backyards. And most people are interested in three types of organisms: bees, butterflies, and birds.
Yeah.
And in many cases, all three at the same time. And by gardening with native plants, that's what you can absolutely help do, is help provide food and habitat for those organisms.
So perfect. It's nice to have you here. And Rich Guthrie, always great to have you here. You said you have a new series on your blog, which is at the Times Union Blogs, and it's a 50 Birds Every Birder Should Know.
That's right. A series we're starting out with, that I'm starting out with, and it's all about, if you're going to go out there looking at birds, get these guys down cold so that you can pick them out at a distance, up close, flying away, walking, talking, and or quacking, and this way you can concentrate, you can focus on some of the other ones and learn the common ones better.
Okay, so 50. So pelican, what else we got
well,
on the list?
Well, actually, pelican's not on the list.
Really?
Really.
Penguin?
No, why bother?
All right, well, what's on your list?
Want to focus on the ones we're apt to see around here.
Oh, I see.
Okay, so we get a little more mundane.
Mm-hmm.
Pigeon.
Okay.
Sparrow.
Right.
Crow.
Right.
Duck.
I know those already.
All right. See,
okay.
You're well on your way.
Wow. How about that? The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website. It's wamc.org/VoxPop. You can check in on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Tweet us at @WAMCVoxPop or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. And with all that said, let's go to the phones. Ronald in Malta, you're first.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good.
I just had a curious question.
Okay.
If I cut down a tree that has bird's nest in it and possible babies, will the family go the adults go somewhere else and start over building a new nest and raising young ones?
Great question.
It is a good question, and it happens, unfortunately. Well, it happens. And depends on a couple of things. Number one, the species involved. Some bird species are very, let's say, can adapt quickly. And it also depends on the age and state of the young. If the young are if it's a nest without eggs, they'll just go someplace else and build a new nest and lay eggs there. If there are eggs in there, the chances are they will give it up and move on. If there are young, an advanced stage, they could very well come back and try and feed the young if you reset the nest in a place where they can have safe, quiet access to it. Everybody will be upset. I've seen where it has worked in the past, where people have taken a nest of, let's say, a robin and lifted it and moved it over to another position someplace else, and the robins continued, not happy, but feeding the babies and fledging them successfully.
Okay, because this one tree was totally taken down, so I heard the birds were sort of like attacking the tree, so I had the impression that there was young ones in the nest and was very upset.
Well, again, it depends on the stage that the nestlings are in at the time and the species involved. Now, if something like that should happen and you want to rescue, and I use that term carefully because a lot of times rescuing is help they really don't need. There are licensed wildlife rehabilitators that can come to the rescue and can offer either advice or direct assistance.
Okay, thank you very much for your advice, and I enjoy listening to all your shows on WAMC.
Thank you.
Ronald, thank you very much for the call. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. It's our bird show today. We're joined by our regular Rich Guthrie and also a new guest, Francis Groters, owner of Catskill Native Plants in Kerhonkson, New York. Let's go to line two. Ivan in Ghent, you're on.
Hi. How are you guys doing today?
Good. Nice to have you here.
I put some bluebird-type nests up, attached them to some poplar trees in front of our home last year. And I saw they were getting activity, and then they seemed to fill up with bees. I was wondering if you ever encountered that problem before.
With bees?
With bees, yeah. They got bees nests in them.
Yeah, honeybees, I presume. Or yellow jackets or hornets. Not uncommon.
Okay.
And if it's honeybees, a beekeeper will be happy to find them and help you out there. If it's the hornets, then you've got a small problem. And the birds will obviously not utilize the nest box if there's a hive of bees in there.
Right.
So there's not much you can do about it other than when the time comes, clean the nest out. And the likelihood of the bees coming back to that site is small, low.
Okay. We cleaned it out, and hopefully we're going to be able to get some birds this spring. We're hoping.
Okay, well, do it while it's cold, because you don't want to be out there on an August evening trying to do it.
No.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Ivan.
Thanks a lot, Ivan. Let's go to Cheryl and Troy. Hi, Cheryl, you're up. Hello, Cheryl? Are you there, Cheryl?
Hello.
Hello, you're there.
I have a question about hawks and other large raptors or large birds of prey. That how common is it for them to snatch domestic animals, dogs or cats?
Well, not common at all for a couple of reasons. Usually around the hawks that might be capable of doing this are pretty reluctant to be around places where people who have pets are. In other words, they pretty well avoid your backyard. It is a hazard for free-roaming cats. Once again, a good reason to keep the cats indoors. And it's sort of like in the bird world, turnarounds, fair play.
Okay.
That's what you'd say, Rich. That's what I say. Yeah. I don't mean to make light of it, but it is a genuine hazard out there. And
I have seen two different times now. I live in Lansingburg, which is relatively city.
Sure.
Two times I've seen hawks in our yard.
Uh-huh. Well, those hawks are not likely the ones that will go after an animal the size of a domestic pet.
Okay.
They're generally, I will have to assume that they are one of the smaller hawks, like the Cooper's hawk or the sharp-shinned hawk, or even a red-tailed hawk. And those are really not inclined to go. They're more interested. If you had a pet mouse, I'd worry a lot.
But well, these are small dogs that we have. But,
yeah, I wouldn't worry about the small dogs. Usually too large for a large hawk for a hawk to go after. However, it does happen. I know of instances where, you know, a particularly aggressive raptor will go try anything out, and a dog acting not smart.
Well, how would a dog act smart?
Avoid.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Act intelligent.
Okay, fair enough.
Move around with vigor. the body language that hawks read, they are interested in going after the weaker of the prey sort. So they don't want to fight on their hands. They just want an easy meal. And for them to take on something that has exhibits a lot of energy aggressiveness, they're not going to go after that. They're going to go after that mouse that scurried across the driveway.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. I remember seeing in our neighborhood one day, we thought it was an owl, came up over the neighbor's house, and it had either a rabbit or a squirrel in its mouth.
Owl is a different story.
Really? Will an owl grab a cat?
Yep.
Well, you should have told Cheryl that.
Cheryl. let me tell you, keep the cat in at night.
Really?
And stay with the dog at night. Because the great horned owl is a huge, powerful bird.
Yeah.
And they're fearless. They don't really fear people so much as a hawk would, because they're out at night when people are not out.
Yeah.
And so there's very little avenue of contact there. But you know, there's a, it's not funny, and I don't know if it's true or not,
right.
There is this legend, maybe a rural legend,
okay,
of somebody finding a great horned owl nest, and inside the nest were a lot of cat collars.
Okay, so this, you have no evidence of this.
I
this
don't
is just
know if that
something
that,
you read in Ripley's or something.
Something that I heard on the Keep the Cats Indoors stories.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, okay, but you're always all for that.
Definitely, and for more reasons than just
and
that.
And vets are with you on that, by the way, many times.
Oh, you know, there's another thing out there, and I'll just keep the cats indoors. I heard about this tapeworm thing, and I don't think this is a legend. I think this is for real, that is finding its way into the feral cat population. And these tapeworms are huge. Poor cats have got to be feeding a colony out there that that's sapping their strength. So another reason why this business of outdoor cats is not a good idea in Northeast America.
This is great. Now we have a gardener here. We have you talking about pets. I mean, it's all the Vox
yes,
Pops
right,
rolled into one.
Yes, right.
All right.
One-stop shopping.
Let's go to Bill in Saratoga and see what other doors we can open. Hi, Bill.
All right, I'm not going to condone any of this behavior, but the other night, my sister-in-law lives across the street from us, called my wife, and she had a goose that was at her back door driving her dog nuts and appeared to be trying to get in the house. So my wife went up there, and they had shooed the goose off the porch. It was obvious it couldn't fly. So my wife took it upon herself to go over and approach the goose. It was a little hostile at first, and it hissed at her and, you know, spread its wings. She talked to it in a very calming manner for quite some time and was able to actually pick the goose up, which I can't believe she did. But and then my sister-in-law and her got in their car and drove across the street. It's about a 500-yard walk, it would have been, and released the goose on the bank of the creek that runs through our property. And the goose got in the water and paddled off and actually honked goodbye, I guess.
Yeah.
The next morning, my wife went to check on to see if the goose was still around, and unfortunately, it had frozen into the ice, and something had already been eating it.
Come on, I was looking for a happy ending. Yeah.
Yeah, I was hoping for it. She was, too. Well, she said it was about the most incredible thing she's ever done. And
No.
Well, thanks for sharing.
I don't think it was very smart, but what should she have done in that situation? In one of the previous callers, I know you had mentioned a wildlife rehabilitator, and there's certainly no shortage of geese around, but
yeah, I know, but every animal is special, and I'm in that camp. Again, yes, the wildlife rehabilitators. In New York State and in neighboring states, you can go onto the Wildlife Agency website and do a search for licensed wildlife rehabilitators and contact one of these dedicated people. These people are trained, and most of them do it out of the kindness of their heart and out of their pocketbook. But their mission is to help out these poor critters. No telling what caused the goose's injuries, and if they could, they would seek a way to repair the injuries and bring the animal or bird back into the wildlife and release it. So, but I applaud your wife for trying, and golly, that was a pretty good communication and karma that she had there to be able to approach the goose. You know, that's something I want to alert folks to, and that is injured wildlife don't always assume that your approach is beneficial.
Mm.
They are vulnerable, they feel threatened, and some of them are will become quite defensive and aggressive in that mode. So be very careful, especially when picking something up. I mean, you're not far from their beak. And sometimes their beak is not far from your nose, or worse yet, your eye. So
there's a parable there somewhere. Let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today, also joined by Francis Groters, owner of Catskill Native Plants, talking about making your habitat, you know, more conducive to having the birds and the bees and whatnot. We'll be back.
Support comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York. providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years. QFCC.com. Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. And New York Folklore Society, partnering with Catskills communities, documenting their rural agriculture heritage in an exhibition of the photography of Benjamin Halpern during Delaware County Maple Weekends. NYFolklore.org.
one 800 348 2551 is our telephone number. It is Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. It's our bird show for the month of March. Rich Guthrie is here. We're also joined today by Francis Groters, owner of Catskill Native Plants in Cahokia, New York. Why? Someone who is a gardener on the show today? A fair question. Well, one of the things Francis specializes in is making your backyard habitat more friendly to birds. You know, given some of the birds that are native to this neck of the woods, what would I do in my backyard if I, say, wanted to have bluebirds in my backyard?
Right. The first thing you need to do is assess the type of habitat you have, the gardening condition. So that is a garden question. But if you have sort of an average soil, that kind of thing, there are lots of plants you can plant for bluebirds. Serviceberries, sumac is a plant that lots of, and you'll
so
be helped.
All birds won't eat all berries?
No, so, correctly. They won't necessarily all eat some, every single berry that's out there. Some of them prefer, on our sumac, we mostly see robins. We see woodpeckers, pileated woodpeckers. We see downy woodpeckers. We'll see bluebirds on sumac when they come back and they've arrived here in the spring, and then we have a cold spell and there's no insects for them to feed. They'll go to some of the fruiting plants mm-hmm. and use those to help support themselves. Sumac, as I said. But during the season, bluebirds are certainly eating a lot of the plants that we normally think of as fruit-bearing, like serviceberries. Hollies, great plants for robins. I see robins feeding right now on crab apples,
mm-hmm.
and not to forget the hummingbirds.
Right,
planting native flowers for the summer bloom, the blossoms will be a great attraction for the ruby-throated hummingbirds when they come back to town.
We often forget that hummingbirds are birds as well, because they're so different and so interesting and so unique. But they do feed on insects that are near the flowers they're taking nectar from. So they're doing two things when they come to plants. They're taking nectar, which provides sugar and provides them with energy, but they're also collecting insects on those plants. And there are plants like bee balm, honeysuckle vines, wild columbine that are great for hummingbirds.
And again, we're focusing on native wild plantings rather than alien or aggressive invasive plant
right.
species that may have some side benefit to the birds, like the buckthorn. Birds will eat, but the buckthorn will aggressively take over a habitat and remove the native aesthetic that we enjoy so much in our backyards.
Speaking of alien and maybe not aggressive species, but there's this whole controversy about the mute swans.
Right.
And what's the latest, Rich Guthrie?
Well, aggressive is a key word there, because the mute swan, as graceful, as beautiful, as romantic as the mute swan appears, it ain't. It is downright nasty when
really?
It comes to getting along with its neighbors, to the detriment of some of the other smaller, less aggressive native bird species. So,
how did the mute swan get here?
Back in the Victorian era, it was a popular popular for rich folks to bring in stuff, be it swans or pheasants or even sparrows and doves
mm-hmm.
from afar, and also plants. They made a big deal about bringing alien plant species to their gardens, to their backyards,
yeah.
to their estates. Well, these things, the swans had wings, took off, and found it very comfortable elsewhere. They're very prolific. We're able to colonize outside of their preserves and have taken over many of the smaller wetland habitats that had native birds nesting in there, to the exclusion of all the rest of them.
Now, they've been here 120 years or
a long time,
and
yeah.
So they're sort of regulars now, right?
Well, they've elbowed their way into the environment.
But don't they deserve to be here now?
Well, in the eyes of some wildlife managers and ecologists and others, no. They don't belong here. They are like some of the other alien species that we thought was a good idea. Turns out was not such a good idea. You know, they're graceful. They're beautiful. They're aesthetically pleasing. However, and so are so many of the other invasive alien species that we've introduced into the environment. There are the detriments in doing such a thing. And so the hardcore, serious people in the environmental management field are saying enough is enough. There's too many of them. Let's cut back on them.
Now, what do you mean cut back?
Oh, we're talking about culling, about an aggressive effort to eliminate the mute swan from the environment and all of the connotations that it entails. There's been a lot of resistance to it, a lot of opposition to it, a lot of support, too. Depends on who you're talking to. And at this point, the Department of New York Environmental Conservation Department is where we're dealing with. I don't know if any other states have taken up this banner. But in New York, they decided, whoa, this was a hotter coal than we wanted to mess with. And so they put it down and are waiting to hear more comments and sit back and give it some rethinking.
Okay, let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. John and Ravina. John, you're up.
Yes, a couple of things. One of them, great programs all the time, and especially the call-in things.
Thank you.
Two things real quick. One of them is we must have 10,000 red cedar trees on our property, and over the years, it's not, you know, the most desirable tree. But I'll tell you, in the wintertime, and especially this winter, so long and hard, robins by the thousands have come through, and they eat the blueberries. Hello.
Yes.
Hello. No,
yes,
we're listening. There. We're listening.
And you're right about the robins. For some reason this year, the robins have stayed around in droves. And I like red cedar.
It's also the only a bird, the cedar waxwing. Most of our birds are not named for plants, but cedar waxwing is a bird that's been named for a plant, the eastern red cedar, because they really love to eat the. Those are actually not berries on eastern red cedar. They're modified cones. They also have seeds in them, like a berry would do. But they're actually a cone because the cedars, of course, are an evergreen conifer.
Right,
and it's also what gives a flavor to gin.
Yeah, really. Also, when they're around, and then we no longer see them because of the climate differences now, is a evening grosbeaks. They would come through in swarms and go for those berries.
Yeah,
cones.
Not this year.
Not this year. Not for a while. Not for a long time.
You're right about that.
And then one other quick one is turkey population. I mean, we had one turkey most of the winter up until about 6 weeks ago. Then he disappeared. We had actually two on and off, one right through, and then about 6 weeks ago, none. And now all of a sudden, everybody's seeing turkeys in big flocks. Where did they go?
Your neighbor's yard.
So they're around.
They don't migrate. They walk and flop and fly from place to place. They're not a long distance traveler, so they weren't far away. They were lurking out there.
Okay, because I've talked to people in all kinds of counties up and down the valley, and nobody had seen them for weeks and weeks and weeks, and all of a sudden this past week, they're everywhere.
Well,
so that is really odd.
I agree with you, and it's probably they found themselves a good place to hide out in this harsh winter and have probably used up the food stock, and now they're raiding your pantry.
And now it'll be warmer tomorrow, and who knows what you'll see.
Oh, there'll be insects hatching out tomorrow and over the weekend, and lots of birds will be happy.
Oh, great.
Even
John,
in the snow.
Every door open for them. Thank you.
Yes,
John,
sir.
Thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Russ in Waterford. Russ.
Hello there, gentlemen. Actually, it's funny you guys were talking about bluebirds. I backed out of my garage today, and I saw a bluebird back in my bluebird house, and I think it's awful early. And I wanted to know if there's something maybe I can feed them until food sources become more plentiful.
Well, I think Francis might have a suggestion for you. Not so much this year, but down the road.
Right. If you want to really help maintain those bluebird populations, especially for the ones that are returning early, I already mentioned plant sumac. It's a really important berry producing tree for birds to overwinter and a lot of our early returning migrants. So that's an absolute great choice to plant to help them out.
Well, my experience with sumac has been that once it takes off, there's absolutely no way of containing it. I mean, it will run and run and run. Pretty soon it can overwhelm your property if it gets away from you.
Well, exactly. You don't want to plant it in the flower border in front of your house. But if you have wild areas where you can plant it, where it can run a little bit, it's great for the birds. And you can control it just by continuing to mow it. And it won't take over your vegetable garden or anything like that.
And over in England, it's featured in a lot of the gardening magazines as a desirable ornamental plant, exotic ornamental plant in England. So we're lucky; we have them as native plants.
Is there something like, should I put a suet block out or something now to supplement them, since there's 2 foot of snow underneath the box? I mean, I'm really kind of at a loss.
Well, don't worry about that. Yeah, don't worry about them. Let's hope that they'll find some native berries somewhere in the neighborhood.
If they're here, then there's probably something to eat, right?
Yes, and there's not much you can put out for them. They're not a feeder bird. They're not one that will come to the feeder, unless you want to try crumbling suet, but they have to find it first. But once they do, they'll love you for it. I've heard of people putting out grape jelly. Once again, they have to find it. They have to learn that they like it. Once they do, they love you.
Grape jelly, huh?
I strew some mealworms around during the summer because I read that somewhere.
Oh,
they disappear, so.
Yeah, and I've actually had bluebirds come to me when I've offered them mealworms. And if you want to start a mealworm colony, that's very easy to maintain, and it will supply you with a plentiful supply.
Wife would love that.
Yeah, that's a great plan, Russ, and good luck.
Mealworms aren't that bad.
All right, fair enough. You're like Dr. Doolittle. The bluebirds come to you, and you feed them worms. Michael in Albany. Michael, you're up.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I was north of Queensbury, a little north and east. It was around 12:30 a.m., 1 a.m. in the morning. I was driving down a farmer's road, rural area, and I saw a large bird. And I mean, the wingspan had to be between 4 and 6 feet, with very light-colored feathers. And I was just wondering, what type of bird would that be in that area and at that time of night?
Well, first thing that comes to mind is the owl. A great horned owl, when looked at from underneath, will appear largely white and light-colored.
Can they be that big?
They can appear to be that big a lot of times, and I'll say at night, things have an exaggerated expression.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other possibility is could have been something else. Happened to be on the road when you happen to be going by.
What could it be, though?
Oh, let's just say goose. It's not that he wanted to be there flying around at night, maybe where he spent the night and you drove by and put him in the air. I say goose glibly. I'm trying to think of some other possibilities that might be large and appear white like that.
I remembered he had a very gold color to the tip of his wing, and the tail end of his wing was more white colored. So I don't know if that helps any more in the description. Of course, it was night and I was driving down the road, and to see this fly kind of in my field of view was quite surprising. So I've been curious as to what it could have been.
Well, I'm going to stick with a great horned owl. They're a very large bird. The females are quite large. And in a minute here, I'll be able to come up with a figure with the exact measurements.
Maximum wingspan?
Maximum wingspan.
All right, stand by,
Michael. Statistic.
Appreciate it
very much.
Thumbing through. What month of the year was this, by the way?
He just rang off.
Oh, okay. Well, they can have a 3 foot wingspan, which at night could look 12 feet, no, 6 feet. But a 3 foot wingspan is quite a large wingspan for a bird. So.
Okay, fair enough. Well, you know, you're right. At night, and if it was flying by your car in the middle of the night, you could maybe.
4 feet.
Okay.
Four feet, not 3 feet.
Let's go to line one. Is it Mady or Maddie in Beckett? Mady.
Mady.
You're up.
Hi.
Listen,
I have blue jays all over my house. Well, not all over it, but in various spots, and they're pecking at what I Googled and came to understand is paint that they're eating for the calcium. And it was suggested that I get eggshells But I, you know, the big grocery stores don't even use eggs. They come liquid in liquid form. I can't really find anybody who will give me eggshells. What is another form of calcium that I could provide for the blue jays?
Well, birds will go to roadsides in search of rock salt to get
really
a cow. Yeah, they oftentimes. And by the way, this happens especially now that there's a lot of snow covering the fields. They'll go for the roadsides for grit, and which consists a lot of times of rock salt. And if you ever encounter any of these birds feeding along the road and, you know, coming down on a fast-moving car, I always say give them a toot of the horn. That will get them out of your way. That will startle them and move them better than plowing into them. But the other possibility, eggshells. Gee whiz, I could deliver dozens of eggshells to you if I needed to.
You could? Boy, I really need them. But so you think I should get some rock salt and put it out on the platform feeder?
Well, you know, I wouldn't buy a big bag of it just for the birds, because a lot of it will end up dissolving onto your feeder after it rains the first time. So, no, I would say, gee whiz, I'm having a small problem just embracing this idea of them taking paint off your house for the calcium that's in it.
Well, that's what it said on Google.
Well, then it must be true.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's on the internet.
They make a heck of a lot of noise in there. And when I walk in my house and I look at my living room window, I see like six or seven tails that are sitting on the edge of the window on the outside, and they're pecking away like crazy.
My God. Well, could it be the paint, or might something else?
Bugs inside, you
mean? Yeah, that kind of thing. I don't want to, you know.
It's so cold, though. I mean, they're doing it outside. I can't imagine anything living.
Well, I'm at a bit of a loss here. I'm going to have to Google that myself see what they come up with. But on the other hand, get some crack corn. Put that out on your platform feeder and keep the Blue Jays distracted with a good meal.
Get some aluminum siding, and then you're all set.
Come on.
If you really think they really need the calcium, you can buy oyster shells. There are a number of gardening supplements that are designed to add calcium to the soil.
That'll be a good experiment.
So you could try that and see if they go after it, but that certainly better than the salt.
Okay, I wonder if they sell that at pet stores for the garden.
More likely at a garden supply store, they would have calcium supplements, including oyster shells for the garden.
Or down to the local diner right after breakfast.
Well, there you go. Hey, matey, if you do try this, let us know. Give us a call next month and let us know if it worked.
All right, I will do that.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
What an interesting program thus far. Oh, good heavens.
See what happens.
Very interesting questions, and, who knows what will happen next. It's the home stretch, and it's coming up. It's Vox Pop. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie and Francis Groters are here. Yours truly, Ray Graff, back in a flash.
Support comes from Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people. nature.org/Adirondacks. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. And Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts. Providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com.
Yeah, a little John Coltrane here on the show. Yes, very nice. Rich Guthrie is here. It's the Bird Show. And also joining us today, Francis Groter is owner of Catskill Native Plants in Cuyahoga, New York. And we welcome your calls. And there are two calls of the same nature. Line 3 has a question from Lynn, who's on now. Line 2, Stanley in Johnstown. Lynn, you get the first crack at this.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
This is my new smartphone. I don't know what the heck goes on with it.
Okay.
The more questions I get, but I have a question about the sumac being able to grow in the shade.
Okay.
Or in some shade.
Generally not. It really is a prefers full sun. It very rarely would grow as a forest understory tree. You've got to try to establish it in an old field, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it'll be really happy there.
So if you had a shady spot and you wanted something like sumac in there, what would you think?
Well, there's still feed the birds. That's hard. There aren't too many berry producing shrubs that like shade. A spice bush is a good possibility. That likes it a little bit moist and likes it a little bit shady.
And maybe blueberries?
Blueberries, they'll produce, you know, we always recommend to people to plant blueberries as much sun as possible. But certainly we see them growing in the forest understory and producing berries, just not as much as they would produce in full sun.
Okay.
But you'd still help feed the birds that way.
All right.
Thanks, that's great. The next thing I call about lifespans of your typical little bird here.
The lifespan of the typical bird, it would vary by bird, right?
I sit here and look at my little birdies outside, and I wonder, you know, how long do chickadee live?
Well, it's kind of inversely proportioned to their size. A rule of thumb. Big birds, long life. No, directly proportional, I should say.
Yep.
Big birds, long life. Small birds, short life. And the average, taking in all factors in consideration, the average lifespan of a small bird is 3 years. Now, that includes... most birds have a very high infant mortality rate from egg hatching to fledging and successful first year, all included. 75%, it's a high toll. 75% don't make it through year two. So that's a rough figure, but it's...
That's taking in the average then?
Everything, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
So, learning how to find food and avoid being food themselves. After they... get their wings, so to speak, then your small bird, a chickadee, could live to be 8, 9 years, 10 years, 12 years.
Very interesting.
There are longevity records that we learn from bird banding, where we put a band on the leg of a bird, check its age before we release it, catch it again 10 years later, we have a figure, we have a statistic. Large birds, such as the red-tailed hawk, can live 20, 25, 30 years. And a goose or a swan could live 40, 50, 60 years, and the parrots are known to live 100 years.
Wow.
So that's impressive.
I actually have some parrots.
Ah.
I'm going to have to leave them on my will, I think.
All right, Lynn.
One more thing. There's a couple, actually. But orioles, I'm trying to attract orioles. How could I do that?
Okay.
Plant a willow tree.
They love nesting very high up in trees. And
you mean a weeping willow?
Sort of. But we like white. What is it?
Black willow is the native species. Weeping willow is not. If you don't have large trees on your property, obviously you're not going to plant one that you're going to get an oriole nesting next year. But you can plant for the next generation. We have orioles nesting in red maple trees, oak trees, that sort of thing.
Okay. And for the short term, folks down south put out half a grapefruit or an orange, nail it to a tree.
That's what I'm going to try to do.
Orioles, if they've been in Florida or Texas, and I've learned that it's a good thing to do, will know it and recognize it and come to it. If they haven't had that favorable encounter, they won't figure it out for a long time, and it may go untouched. So that's one way to doing it. And then I know somebody who had a rare oriole in her yard and fed it grape jelly. Oriole was happy. Stayed around for a long time.
Well, Lynn, thank you very much for the call. Let's go over to Stanley. Stanley, your question was somewhat co-opted by Lynn, but you're on anyway. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. Hi, Rich. Good speaking to you again. Anyway, I was wondering, you never see any dead birds from old age in the woods or anywhere. I was wondering, do they, like, go in seclusion to die, or how does that work?
Well, usually... you're right about that. You very seldom will find a bird that died of natural causes for several reasons. Number one, as you suggest, they do try to find a reclusive area, a sheltered area, where they can be quiet and left alone. Or, you know, their reflexes are slowed down, their attention span is lost, and a predator finds them in a hurry.
Mm. Okay, yeah, I know. We've got a Merlin, a sharp-shinned hawk, and a Cooper hawk here.
Well,
they dine very well on my birds.
That's what they do. And,
that's nature. And, anyway, it just popped in my mind, the one caller before, said something about the birds pecking on her house.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Well, we have these hairy woodpeckers, and what they're going after, I have some exposed wood on my fascia on my home, and these carpenter bees, they every year they drill their holes,
mm-hmm.
and they leave, and that's what they're after, because you can see the remnants of the bees under where they were pecking.
Mm. Well, they're doing us a favor.
Well, they really are, but they're destroying my house.
Well, yes, well. The bees, blame it on the bees.
I'll have to cover
I'll
it.
I'll just stick up for the birds here.
Yeah, well, anyway, we're feeding the birds, and yeah. That's pretty cool. Anyway, I was a guy that I got my Christmas tree out there again, and I sprinkle my oil seed over the Christmas tree, and I'll tell you, the birds just love that.
There you go.
Great. Good talking to you again, Richie.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Stanley. We appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Called you Richie. Can we call you Richie?
We can call me Richie.
All right, Richie, let's take another call, shall we? It's going to be like happy days around here. Nancy in Belchertown. Nancy, you're up.
Hi. Ray, I want you to know that I share your curiosity about the local penguins, but I guess Rich doesn't want to
I've
talk
seen them.
About.
I swear you I've seen them, Nancy.
Yeah,
well,
me
there's
too.
An old article years ago that I read. It asked the question, where have all the perhaluxias gone?
Mm.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't know what that means.
Perhaluxia is a bird of the Southwest Desert that looks very much like a female cardinal. And the fellow who wrote it, tongue-in-cheek, was about, as a kid, he remembers seeing lots of perhaluxias around. I think it was in Brooklyn, New York. And obviously they were female cardinals, but he doesn't understand where the perhaluxias have gone. And that holds true for Ray's penguins, I think.
All right, now, so enough about my penguins. Nancy,
yeah.
What's your question?
How long do we feed the birds, or do we do that all year long? And a question for our other expert is, can you mention attractive grasses that birds would be interested in? I never thought of grasses as a food form.
All right, Francis.
Yeah, we do tend to focus on berry-producing shrubs and trees, but lots and lots of perennials help provide seeds that a lot of our seed-eating birds, like juncos and sparrows and other types of seed-eating birds, like to eat. Really, just about any native grass is a great choice for feeding the birds. If you let it go to seed, you can't be a neatnik in your garden. You can't decide, I'm going to cut this down after it finishes flowering, or I'm going to cut it down in the fall.
No.
Most of our native grasses, there are two types of grasses. There are cool season grasses that green up really early in the spring and then produce seeds really in spring and early summer. Then there are a number of other native grasses that are warm season grasses, and they don't start growing till the warm temperatures almost the summer have hit, and they tend to produce seeds later in the season. They'll keep those seeds into the fall, and very often birds can feed on those seeds in the winter. And some of those grasses are strong enough that they'll still withstand some of the snow and stay above the snow, which is good for the birds. So little blue stem, big blue stem, Indian grass, switchgrass, those are some of the most common native grasses that are great for birds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Thank
Nancy.
You.
And about the feeding of the birds through the course of the year?
Yeah.
Depends on where you are and what you want to attract. Hummingbirds, after May 1st, go for it. Get those wildflowers out there, and if it comes, use a hummingbird feeder. Thistle seed and sunflower seed and cracked corn are good all year round. Birds will keep coming to it. The only caution is after the bears wake up, you want to be cautious. You don't want to be feeding the bears in your backyard. But as far as the birds are concerned, you can keep on feeding them right through the year, and they will enjoy it, and you will enjoy them.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Nancy, thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Cindy in Ghent is next. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I'm enjoying your show. Thanks.
Thank you.
I have two questions. I live down the road from the Columbia County Airport. I believe that Rich is the guy that I heard talking about the albino hawk there some
mm-hmm.
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen that little fellow twice, but I haven't seen him in over a year or so now. And I'm just wondering, is there an update on him?
Well, I understand he's still around. We're talking about not a true albino, but a white red-tailed hawk, which is an interesting phenomenon. There is a strain of red-tailed hawks that are all white,
mm-hmm.
or mostly all white, or perhaps turning to all white over time. They're beautiful, beautiful birds to see. They are conspicuous where they are. They tend mostly to be females. There's something going on in there, and there's room for somebody to take up an interesting study if they choose. But the white red-tailed hawk that's over by the Columbia County, New York airport has been there for years and years. Again, a hawk, red-tailed hawk is a long-lived bird. This bird has proven it has the mettle to survive. And I have seen a recent report from somebody who did see it this year. So I believe he's still around, or she's still around. And if you go down Route 9H, I believe it is, by the airport, keep an eye on both sides of the road, especially the west side, and you might be fortunate enough to see the white red-tailed hawk. I did an article in my Times Union blog about that, and the responses, the replies I've gotten from other people who have seen white red-tailed hawks from around the country is amazing. I mean, they're just they're out there, and people love to see them and talk about them, and I enjoy getting reports of them.
Okay.
All right. I've only seen the fella on the fence that surrounds the airport, but I'll look the other direction, too.
Yeah.
My other question is about, I have these little birds. They're about the size of sparrows. I've never seen them before on my property, but suddenly this year they are eating the little red berries. I can't remember the name of the bush, but it's got a lot of spines and thistle or thorns on it.
Sounds like barberry, but
that is what it is. Thank you.
Okay.
And there's always at least 3 to 5 of them. They're always grouping of them, never just one. They're blue on their bellies. They're light blue and brown on the back. What are they?
I don't know, Francis. Got any?
No, the blue on the berry on the belly is a little bit odd.
I'm going to suggest that maybe they are juncos, J-U-N-C-O, and they have a slate gray, blue gray breast and a white belly, a bright white belly. The females will be brownish on the back, and I'm trying to think of who might have a. Nah, nothing comes to mind with a blue belly.
Well, you can always take a picture, Cindy, and can you post those on your blog, Rich?
I will be glad to receive.
Okay, and you have an email address as well, yes?
I do.
What is that?
It's my name, Richard P. Guthrie, that's P as in Peter, Guthrie, @gmail.com.
Okay, let's go over to Johnny in Tilson. Johnny, you're up.
Hey, hi.
Hi.
Thanks a lot for the show. I always enjoy this program.
Thanks.
I was out before, and I heard a bird that I'm not used to hearing. And I always enjoy hearing Rich identify from somebody.
Oh, I love this.
Themselves.
This is great. Yep.
And I thought I'd take a stab at it.
Super.
All right?
Yep.
Let's have it.
Let's see if we can do it.
Oh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one, Johnny.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's going to be the white-throated sparrow. And I want to say you did a good rendition of the white-throated sparrow song.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, it was very clear. It was very bell-like.
They do it a little better than you. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice.
And that's what it was?
Yeah, white-throated sparrow. And they're beginning to sing this time of year. It's beginning. You know, spring is in the air. A lot of birds are really getting ramped up for spring. The cardinals are singing. The titmice are singing.
I know. You know. And I was just out on my deck, just taking in the day, and I was like, regardless of the snow and all, it's spring, because I was hearing stuff, you know, that I wasn't hearing before.
Well, here's a tip. If you want to listen to and hear some more of them, what I've done is I've gotten a baby room monitor and put the baby pod outside and a mommy pod inside.
Yeah.
These wireless microphones and speakers will get the sounds of the birds outside, even with the doors and windows closed.
Yeah, so that's cool.
It's a good way to get the songs, even in a cold winter day.
Yeah.
Great idea.
Okay, that's great. Could I ask a quickie, Francis?
Sure.
When you're talking sumacs, would that be staghorn sumacs?
It's staghorn sumac. There are four species of sumac in the area, but absolutely the best one for birds is staghorn sumac.
Yeah, because I have a fairly wet property, and I used to have a small little grouping of them that were just naturally there, and for some reason, one by one, they've died off. And I don't know if it's just they've had their lifespan or what that could be about, but
They can be short-lived. They also don't love wet soil. So it may be that originally they started growing in an area that's a little drier, and then for some reason the hydrology of the area changed and became wetter, and they typically don't like that.
Oh, that's interesting.
If it is wet now and you want to plant something that likes wet, the spice bush that I mentioned before, elderberry is a good choice, winterberry is a good choice. All those plants will love the wet soil and help feed the birds.
Winterberry. Right. I hear so many good reports about winterberry, which is a type of holly, isn't it?
It's a type of holly. It's a deciduous holly.
And that birds just devour, just hang out. They come to you, gets out, and they flock to your yard for winterberries.
All right.
Right. And in fact, I have winterberries, again, that are just naturally occurring because it's wet property.
Right, exactly.
And this usually, once in the winter, I'll have a mob of cedar waxwings that will just come and just, you know, totally clear it out. For some reason this year, though, there was robins, there was all different birds. I saw like one cedar waxwing, which I don't know if it's possible because I know they, you know, go in groups, but...
Right.
Yeah. It was definitely different this year, but in the past, certainly the cedar waxwings are great to see in a crowd the way they are.
Johnny, hey, thanks a lot for the call. We're going to move it along here and go to Ella in Spencertown. Ella, you only have about 30 seconds.
I'll make it very quick.
Okay.
I'm wondering if what the gentleman who saw the large bird in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it could have been a snowy owl. They're popping up all over the place, and they have a wingspan of about 5 feet, and they're certainly light.
Definitely white, Ellie. I like your thought.
Really?
Snowy
owl. Is this a possibility?
They're here, and they are out at night, too.
And they're that big?
They are big.
I've seen one, and they are huge.
Yes.
And it caught me off guard because I've never seen one before, but upon research, that was the only thing that it could have been.
Ella, I like your thought, and I'll go with that or great horned owl. I think we're... Well, I think you helped out a lot on that.
Tremendous. And great way to end the show. Ella, thanks a lot.
Excellent. Thank you.
And remember, you can continue to comment on our webpage, wamc.org/voxpop, or you can check in on Facebook, facebook.com/wamcradio. Tweet us, if you wish, at @wamcvoxpop, or email voxpop@wamc.org. Rich, your blog once again.
www.timesunion.com/birding. TimesUnion.com.
And you can find the 50 birds that every birder should know. And Francis Groters, thanks for being here. Great having you here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Hope you enjoyed it. And
we
enjoyed having you here. Support comes from Buttermilk Falls Inn, Milton, taking reservations for dinners, spa days, and weekend escapes on a 75-acre Hudson Riverfront estate with lodging, a farm-to-table restaurant and spa. ButtermilkFallsIn.com. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York. A Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week. YeOldWarwickBookshop.com. And the Beechwood Group of Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC. Serving not-for-profits and individual investors, Mary McDonald Financial Advisor and Joseph Steiniger, CFP Financial Advisor, TheBeechwoodGroup.com. Well, that's it for Vox Pop. Thanks for being here today. We've enjoyed it very much. Thanks to Zach Malloy for his sterling service. Thanks to Anonymous Sandy for answering the calls. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday, and we'll talk chocolate. Say no more.